The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Actually going to be doing something unique, I guess. I mean, this is the time of year. We got a few weeks of content to fill, so we're just trying to be creative, not trying to be generic like all the other podcasts, from other content creators. So this is the Red Sox Douchebag Hall of Fame episode. So we're each going to give a candidate that was a douchebag and would be in the Hall of Fame for it if there was one. So with me tonight, Jeremy Schilling, Nick Diamond. Jeremy, go ahead, lead us off.
So I'm going to age myself a bit because Nick was probably still in diapers when this player played for the Boston Red Sox. And that's Carl Everett. Now, when he first came to the Red Sox, he hit 34 home runs, and I love the guy. Grinder, bulldog. But that is not what he was, because as soon as the success waned, this guy went absolutely bananas with his behavior. He basically picked a side on every single, what's the term I'm looking for? A controversial topic, but like he, for example, took a hard stance that that dinosaurs never existed. Obviously, we never landed on the moon, and so on and so forth. So he was always inserting himself in these like Kyrie flat earth things that just didn't have anything to do with baseball. The next thing that he does is he gets into it with Dan Shaughnessy, and he says some things of the homophobic nature, which I'm not going to repeat. But that wasn't the only thing. He came out very strongly against homosexuality in the clubhouse, that he would retire or that. And I think the quote was set that here it is, quote, set him straight, quote, if he ran across a gay player. And that's really the tip of the iceberg with this guy being just a bad person. He has lost his kids to then get them back. He held a gun to his wife's head. He got into another aggravated assault with a deadly weapon towards the end of his career. Just an all-around bad dude. And the Red Sox made a mistake acquiring him. And as soon as they figured it out, they shipped him out the following year. So, this might be more of like a douchebag, bad person thing, because a lot of it. He made contact with an umpire. He got in shoving matches with his managers. He fought with his own teammates. This guy literally couldn't walk down the street without getting in some sort of altercation. It makes no sense. And as a result, he probably cost himself a lot of money.
So Everett was here. I was kind of super fair weather at that point, the 2000, 2001 seasons. I know 2001 was kind of a bit of a shit show. We weren't a playoff team that year. So things tend to get a little crazier when you're not having good seasons. And based on everything I've heard, he was a polarizing guy, as Jeremy mentioned. And just imagine if you had a Carl Everett type personality in the current clubhouse. I mean, do you want Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, all those guys coming up around the Carl Everett type guy? That would be.
Let me put it to you another way, Terry. Imagine if there was Twitter back then. He would get killed. MLB would be forced to step in. he got away with a bunch, and he got suspended and fined a lot. But with the pressure from the regular fan on social media, it would have put a tremendous pressure on the teams and Major League Baseball with this guy.
Like Jeremy said, I was pretty young when Carl Everett was playing for the Boston Red Sox. Kind of from like my era, he kind of reminds me of like a Milton Bradley type of guy. Aubrey Huff. Aubrey Huff's big on Twitter. Everyone hates him. So those are the kind of personalities that Everett kind of reminds me of. I know Milton Bradley was running with the law a lot of times. He got basically released because of his behavior. So that's kind of what I'm putting, kind of comparing them, those two. But yeah, I just don't have a lot of memories of Everett, so there's not much I can comment on from my perspective, I guess.
I was just trying to see, did the Red Sox even make the playoffs in 2000? Let's see. No, we didn't. All right, so yeah. Yeah, and so we just weren't a good team at all when he was here. So there's literally nothing you can go on. Like with a Josh Beckett type guy, you know, who is kind of a douche in some ways, you can at least say with Beckett, yeah, but 2007, dude was a stud. You know, ALCS MVP. You got nothing. It just seems like the Carl Everett era in Boston was just nothing but pain.
I think you can call Everett a bad guy. Josh Beckett was a winner, a gamer. When he didn't win, he didn't get his way, he would complain and be a douche. But when he won, things were going good. So you can't really compare the two. I think Everett was just a bad person.
Yeah, fair enough. Josh Beckett randomly did tackle a lead singer at like in a bar type thing. This was only a few years ago, and I think he even got arrested, but I just laughed at that, you know, and we named our dog after him. So I'm actually a Josh Beckett guy, but I always found myself kind of in the minority in like 2011, 2012, when things weren't going quite as well. But yeah. All right. So my guy, I have to go with David Price. I hated David Price as a Tampa Bay Ray. He ran his mouth to the Red Sox a lot. I think he even trashed David Ortiz, if I'm not mistaken, while he was in Tampa. And then I hated him even more when he came to Boston. And, you know, 2016 was relatively uneventful. He did get shelled by the Indians at the time, as they were called. In game two, Mike Napoli stole a base on him, as I always love to remind people. Just straight up stole the base. It wasn't even defensive indifference. And David Price, a lefty, is looking right at first base before he gets into his windup, and Napoli steals straight up. That was my moment of doom that October. But it was relatively uneventful, and then he comes into 2017, and I don't know if you want to put it in the category of a controversy, but he said something about Red Sox fans not understanding baseball and this and that. That happened in spring training. And, you know, it was a big story for a day or two. And then you had the Eckersley incident on the plane where he accosted him. They were on a road trip. And then immediately when the plane landed in Boston, we were supposed to play the Royals that weekend, Price would have made a start, but he goes on the injured list. So I don't know. Maybe he was hurt. I don't know. Or maybe he didn't want to face the music when he got home. But you had that. And then in 2018, you had the Fortnite thing, which he was scheduled to play the Yankees next in the Bronx, which was his house of horrors over his career. And there was a start earlier in the season before the Fortnite thing where he was getting shelled by the Yankees. He came out of the game with hand numbness, but said he was fine after the game. Like his feeling came back and he didn't expect to miss a start, and he didn't. So then fast forward to the Fortnite thing. He didn't want to face the Yankees. Dave Dombrowski was the GM at the time, sent him back to Boston, had every single test done on him that you could think of, and on his hand, his elbow, and even his shoulder. You know, so David Price could not come back to the team with any excuses, you know, had a clean bill of health. And that's what happened. He made his next start that weekend in Toronto. But the guy was just polarizing as hell, ran his mouth to the media. I don't think he was very accountable throughout his time here. And he was so bad that the Red Sox were willing to eat half of his contract for the remainder of the 3 years that were left. So they sent him to the Dodgers and paid him $16 million a year to not be on the Boston Red Sox. So I hated him.
Actually, one thing, they didn't pay him $16 million in 2020. He opted out, which is my biggest regret about that Mookie Betts trade, is if you could have just waited three more weeks.
Oh, true.
And you don't have to pay David Price in 2020 because he's opting out because he's a weirdo. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. He kind of made well with himself and against the Dodgers in 2018. He made one good start out there in the World Series. But besides that, he's really was disappointing in Boston, besides that one or two starts in the playoffs in 18. He was really bad in the playoffs in 17. He had the Fortnite thing, like you keep bringing up, with the hand numbness against the Yankees. He refused to pitch against the Yankees. Yankees would crush him. Yeah, he just was never accountable, and it was very, very frustrating. They won a World Series in 18, but they would have won without him anyways. So you can't give him tons and tons of credit for that.
So, Terry, for those that were listening back then, I was on the podcast for that run in 17 and 18. And we didn't agree on a lot back then, but we agreed on David Price. And I would sum up what I think about David Price as follows, at the risk of Charlie tweeting me later tonight asking me for a dollar for the swear jar. One gigantic bitch. That's what he was, and that's what he was for the entirety of being a Boston Red Sox and beyond. It is inexcusable as a professional athlete to ask out of games, to make yourself unavailable in big moments. And in my opinion, the fan base never made him pay for that. He skirted by. Now, there were some of us for sure, but people don't talk about that, you know, as part of the history of the Red Sox. The Fortnite thing is just the laziest, lamest move you can make, that you don't want to face the music in Yankee Stadium. I hated that guy. I hate that guy today. I was at a golf course. I had a chance to meet him over in Naples. I think he owns a house over there. I passed. The guy was like, "You want to go meet David Price?" I'm like, "No, I'm afraid of what I'd say to him." I echo, like, you still, I was all excited to bring up the Fortnite thing. You beat me to it. So I'm not going to repeat the things you said, because I agree with just about everything, man. And now that I'm talking about it again, all these years later, I forgot how much I hated him, because I'm getting heated up now and he's retired. Like, God, did I hate that guy.
So this is what always boggled my mind. Like, Red Sox fans universally hated David Price when he was in Tampa. Like, nobody liked him. And then when he came to Boston, I think we all gave him a chance in the beginning. You know, it was refreshing to have a bona fide ace, you know, to be at the top of your rotation. But, you know, it went south pretty quick. And he was just so unlikable. Like, how could you like him? I couldn't understand how Red Sox fans, if we all hated him as a Ray, how could you approve of his antics, which are even worse, and even reach a level of cowardice, as I pointed out? I just don't understand how he could be so likable.
There's a certain segment.
I'm sorry. You go, Nick. David Price was never good enough in Boston to be able to do the things he did. Manny Ramirez was good enough in Boston to do the things he did. David Price was didn't live up to his contract. He didn't live up to what he could have done. He was like a 3-8 guy at best in Boston. And at his worst, he was even worse than that. Like, so he never lived up. He never should have been able to – no one should have put up with what he was doing. It's embarrassing that he would dodge starts. He hated going to Yankee Stadium, hated it. And we all know it was a penciled-in loss. So it was just a disgrace that what he did in Boston. I'm kind of with Jeremy thinking about it. The Fortnite thing is just so embarrassing to even talk about now. I remember like Carlos Santana banned it from his clubhouse he was in. He's like, nobody plays Fortnite in my clubhouse or something like that back in the day. It's even the fact that he blamed it on Fortnite is so embarrassing.
All right, my last point, guys, ready for this?
Yeah.
But man, was he good in the playoffs in 18. I remember talking about the breaking those games down with you. And we're like, I mean, we would not have won that if it wasn't for him. He was a huge part of that.
He was good in the CS and the World Series, but against the Yankees, he was awful. He got crushed.
Fair.
He actually didn't get good in that postseason until Game 5. And granted, you needed him to win that game. It was a big game. But the Red Sox carried him to Game 5 of the ALCS. His first game of that round, he left with, I think the game ended up being tied. Marwin Gonzalez might've hit a grand slam, or maybe it was a 3-run home run. It was a big spot. And then Price was just walking the tightrope in that first Astros game. And then Gonzalez came up to bat again. I think there were runners on base and Cora just did not take a chance. He pulled him in the fifth inning. And I remember, we did win that game. So, and then he won in his next start as well. So, and then in the World Series, it was nails in both starts. And Steve Pierce kind of stole the MVP from him. The David Price huggers will tell you that Price should have won it. But he was stout in both World Series starts. So, it took a while for it to happen, but he did get there. But, man, it's still all pain for me. I have the article up, and I'm just trying to find where he trashed Red Sox fans in it, but I just went through it twice and didn't see it. So I won't go there, but go ahead, Nick. Who's your douchebag?
I'm going to go with a guy who never played for the Red Sox, but also won a World Series with the Red Sox. It was a manager, John Farrell. In 2013, you could have picked anybody to manage that team. It didn't matter. Anyone not named Bobby Valentine could have managed that team to a World Series. Unfortunately, they weren't the most talented, but with the events that went on, everything happened for them, and it worked out. Besides 2013, John Farrell was terrible in Boston. 2014, he came in last place. 2015, he came in last place. 2016, he kind of got ran off by the Indians in that ALDS and just looked overmatched. He just – offensively, he couldn't make the right moves. It just never worked out for him. And I don't think a lot of his players respected him, you know, going back on it. I think compared to what you look at Cora, a lot of guys talk up and – great guy, I'd love to play for him. And that never happened with John Farrell. Have you ever heard a player be like, hype up John Farrell? No. I heard players retire and be like, yeah, John Farrell wasn't the best, or especially offensive players. I know some pitchers liked him. I know John Lester liked playing for him. But besides that, there weren't many guys that just John Farrell. No, I even know you're every time you send these podcast links out, it's from Fire John Farrell. So I know you're not a big fan of him. So I'd like to hear what you have to say about him.
Jeremy can go before me, actually. You're on mute.
That hasn't happened in a while. You know, I never had a big hatred for John Farrell. And I never felt like, from my perspective, and maybe you guys have examples and I'm just not remembering, where he really put his foot in his mouth or... I'm not specifically remembering him throwing players under the bus to protect himself, which to me is what makes managers and leaders douchebags. So I don't have a lot to offer here. I mean, the writing was on the wall for me towards the end, and he wasn't a fit. And but that's kind of the life cycle of a manager for about 28 big league clubs. You're hired to get fired. And oftentimes you're the scapegoat for bad rosters. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but I just don't have any strong feelings where I can add to the DB moniker here.
Yeah, so the frustrating thing to me with Farrell is he was always set in his ways. You know, he would never deviate. It was always going to be Tozawa in the eighth, even when he'd have a terrible, you know, five or six outings in a row. He was never great with the kids. And it was interesting when he had to take his leave, you know, because he was diagnosed with, I think, lymphoma. Luckily, it was caught early and, you know, he recovered from it fairly fast. But he did have to take a leave of absence. And with Torrey Lovello taking over, he was the bench coach and became the interim manager. All those kids just thrived with Lovello in there. Like Swihart was a beast those last couple of months. Wade Miley famously had a big spat with John Farrell that was caught by the Nesson cameras and was a minor controversy at the time. He went on a disgusting run with Torrey Lovello and, you know, because of it ended up being the winningest pitcher of 2015, which doesn't say a lot. It was a terrible year. Joe Kelly was still a starter at the time, went on a really nice run with Lovello there. Bradley had his best early stretch under Lovello. And Farrell's bullpen management is, I guess, what I hated the most. Craig Kimbrell hated him. Kimbrell hated coming in before the ninth, and maybe that's partially on Kimbrell anyway. Brad Ziegler, I thought, was a really nice pickup by Dave Dombrowski. He was the Diamondbacks closer at the time we acquired him, but I didn't like how Farrell was using him situationally. The guy had a career 1.5 whip, and Farrell would bring him in with runners on base. I mean, that's not how you should be utilizing that type of a pitcher. And so the bullpen just always seemed to be at odds with Farrell. By the time he finally did get fired, he had lost the clubhouse. He and Pedroia weren't getting along. I just didn't think he was a smart in-game guy. One of my favorite blunders to recall was we were playing, it was like a mid-season game. It might have been in June. We were playing the Rangers. Prince Fielder, I think, is one of the fattest players I've ever seen in Major League Baseball. And he literally had to retire early because he was too fat. And, you know, it caused neck problems and this and that. It was the last inning or whatever. We were tied, so we might have been going into extras. Prince Fielder was on second base with Josh Hamilton at the plate, who is a bona fide power hitter. And Farrell had the infield in for whatever reason with Hamilton at the plate. What do you think happened? The ball went back. It didn't go over the fence, but it went to the fence. Prince Fielder goes from first to home, and the Rangers walked it off. That's just how dumb he was with his baseball IQ. And if had he not gotten cancer, Dave Dombrowski would have fired him during the 2015 season when he got hired. And then he would have had his own guy. And perhaps you might never would have had Alex Cora at that point. You would have had someone else. I don't know who it would have been. But
it would have been Torrey Lovullo. It should have been.
And that would have been fine. I would have loved that.
That's my biggest grief with keeping Farrell. Is Torrey Lovullo was the perfect choice. We let him go to Arizona, and he brought his team to a World Series. Another thing, you brought up the Junichi Tozawa in the eighth every single time. I remember one time in Toronto, Junichi Tozawa sucked. Sucked in Toronto. It didn't matter where he was, what time of the year it was. He goes to Toronto, he gave up six bombs in a series. he would just run him out there in the eighth inning, no matter what it was, and just let Junichi Tozawa give up bombs to Jose Bautista, bombs to Josh Donaldson. It didn't matter. Anywhere else besides Toronto, he was fine, but he just kept running him out there in Toronto. Just let him take 3 days off. He's obviously bad in Toronto. The Blue Jays see him well. They crush him, and they just kept running him out there, and he had just ruined him. I mean, Tozawa should have had a couple more years left in him. I think he should have, but he kind of ran him into the ground and never heard from him again.
Yeah, that was just part of John Farrell's lack of imagination. You know, one of you mentioned a little while ago, Terry Francona just outmanaged that guy so bad in that LCS. And, you know, he couldn't manage personalities. You know, I mentioned the David Price thing with Eckersley. That happened on John Farrell's watch. John Farrell never even apologized to Eckersley for it. You had the Pedroia Machado thing, which was controversial at the time. That happened on Farrell's watch. It's too bad we had to go through another couple of years there, because I think those seasons would have been a lot different. Here's another thing, actually. This was in the summer of 2017. So that was Farrell's last year. The controversies had already happened. We were a postseason team. We were pretty good that year. And we acquired Eduardo Nunez from the Giants. And Brock Holt, years after that, referenced a conversation that he had with Nunez in the clubhouse, where Nunez kind of looked around, literally read the room, and then said to Brock Holt, he goes, "Hey, these guys know we're a first-place team, right? They know we're going to the postseason." And he was basically just pointing out how miserable everyone was. And that was the type of atmosphere that, you know, took place with John Farrell's leadership.
I totally agree. You brought up Brad Ziegler. That was 15, right? Or 16 when they got him.
It was at least 16, I think.
What was the year they acquired Addison Reed and he just didn't use him correctly either?
That was 2017.
Yeah, Addison Reed was a big name with like the Mets, I think, and he looked so good coming into Boston, and they just never used him correctly. And just he had his favorites, he played them, and he just never wavered from it. I don't think Addison Reed did well in Boston, but they never used him right.
He didn't, and I don't know if you remember this, but Farrell tried to make a weird move where he wanted to take Addison Reed out mid-count. He wasn't even going to let him finish the at-bat, but because he had already done a mound visit, he couldn't take him out. And the umpires turned him around, said, no, you got to go back in the dugout. You can't take him out. So I just thought that was interesting. So I got Ziegler's numbers up. So definitely 2016, he had a 1.52 ERA, which sounds low, because a lot of those runs he gave up were inherited runs. So the numbers look a little bit better. But man, if you just would have given him the eighth inning and said he's your eighth inning guy, it would have worked out so much better. And then you would have went to Kimbrel, and you would have had a nice 1-2 punch. But Farrell just couldn't. He just couldn't let go of Tozawa, who did not have a very good year in 2016. The dude was garbage all year, but Farrell kept putting him in high leverage. And so, yeah. So if you're new to the podcast in the last year or two, the name of this podcast was originally the Fire Farrell Podcast. And I started it in the summer of 2017, and he was fired a few years later. And we've rebranded a bunch of times, but we've been the Bastards of Boston longer than any other previous name that we had. And we'll always be the Bastards of Boston. But in hindsight, wouldn't that be a cool name in 2025, the Fire Farrell Podcast? You've got that one guy on Twitter, and his handle is Surviving Grady, you know, from 2003 with Grady Little. I think that's cool. I love the nostalgia there.
I think it's kind of crazy, though, because everybody was trying to fire Bobby Valentine starting like in May. So we would have taken anybody over him. And then Farrell had that magical 13 year, but he was terrible after that. He just, nothing went right after 13. So, yeah, I think it would be a cool name, Fire Farrell Podcast. Fire Farrell. Be kind of funny.
Yeah. And Benny and the Bets would be cool now if had I kept it. But yeah, I think when the Bloom era started and we pivoted to the Bastards, I think it all worked out the way it was supposed to, regardless. But yeah, and John Farrell has never had another job in Major League Baseball. He did interview with the Phillies at one point. And he interviewed with the Angels and was not selected. And now he's a lobsterman, and good for him. I guess he does very well with that. He's got a massive lobster boat that's like 100 feet long. But
I think that's very telling that he never got another job.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't know. This has nothing to do with it, but his son made a few starts with the Indians before they became the Guardians and then kind of flamed out too. It has nothing to do with it, but I kind of popped into my head. I remember with the Red Sox, he faced the Red Sox as an Indians pitcher once or twice, and then he kind of flamed out and never heard from him ever again.
I think he was ended up being a scout, his son, with the Blue Jays last I checked. I doubt he's still there, but yeah, that was in the last probably 4 or 5 years when that happened. So, all right, we will wrap on that. We'll be back we'll have a Wednesday morning drop. I'm going to be flying out west, so we're going to get one or two shows in, but I'll have my equipment with me if stuff does develop. So just be on the lookout for those. Everyone, hopefully you're off to a good start this week. Take care.